I'm mindful of the historic nature of a potential candidacy, seeking to be the first ever out nominee of a major party in American presidential politics.
They're essentially suggesting, as we've seen across this administration, that trans people don't exist at all, full stop.
In the future, we'll wonder why anyone thought that legislation should be made based on ignorance and hatred and misunderstanding.
They is a fun read that asks the big questions about who we are, where we come from, and where we're going.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lisha Chappelle. Angola sheds vices against nature law, gay hat thrown into U.S. presidential ring, and untangling this week's U.S. Supreme Court military trans ban ruling. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Jessica Andrea.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news interaffecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending January 26, 2019. Angola has become the first country in 2019 to decriminalize same-gender sex. Lawmakers passed a bill on January 23rd to overhaul the Southwestern African nation's penal code, which was first instituted by Portuguese colonizers in 1886. The now-deleted Vices Against Nature provision has historically been used against LGBTQ people. A survey conducted in 2017 found that 61% of the nation's 28 million people said that LGB people should have the same rights as their heterosexual counterparts, and 63% said transgender people should have rights. The country gained its independence from Portugal in 1975. It was only last year that Angolan queers and their allies celebrated the first legal recognition by the government of an LGBTQ advocacy group, Iris Angola. Pink News reports that the government has now introduced legislation to ban discrimination based on sexual orientation. Close to 70 countries on the planet still criminalize consensual adult same-gender sex. 34 of Africa's 54 nations lead the way. Similar measures banning gay sex were overturned last year in India and in Trinidad and Tobago, and lawmakers are currently pondering repeal of those statutes in Lebanon and Tunisia.
Japan's Supreme Court has unanimously upheld a law that forces transgender people to get sterilized before they can legally change their gender. The four-justice panel announced on January 24th that they had rejected a challenge to the measure's constitutionality filed by Takakito Usui, a trans man who wanted to change the gender on his official documents without being sterilized. The relevant statute, Law 111, was enacted in 2003. It requires any person seeking to change legal gender to have no reproductive glands or reproductive glands that have permanently lost function. But the justices also acknowledged that the law is invasive and needs to be reviewed as cultural attitudes change over time. Two justices, including the presiding judge, added a separate opinion saying that doubts are undeniably emerging about Law 111. Trans people in Japan seeking gender confirmation surgeries are required to be sterile, single, with no children under 20 years of age, and are diagnosed by at least two respected medical professionals with gender identity disorder, generally called gender dysphoria, in the U.S. and U.K. Law 111 also requires the person to have a body which appears to have parts that resemble the genital organs of those of the opposite gender. Usui's attorney, Tamiyasu Oyamu, told Agence France-Presse that trans activists could use the justice's stated reservations to pressure lawmakers into making changes. "We have been at this case for 2 years," he said. And while it appears to be the end of the legal road for his client, Oyama noted that every month, every 6 months, we can see an improved understanding of the issue by society.
According to the findings of a groundbreaking study released this week by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, 1 in 50 American high school students identifies as transgender, and 1 in 3 of them say that they had attempted suicide in the previous year. The agency added transgender-related questions to its most recent survey of high school students in 10 states, conducted in 2017. It included Colorado, Maine, Michigan, Vermont, and Wisconsin, and 9 large urban school districts, including New York City, Los Angeles, Boston, Cleveland, and Detroit. The first trans-related study by the government agency responsible for the nation's physical and mental health found that transgender students are frequent victims of violence on campus or going to and from school. Trans teens are far more likely than their cisgender peers to abuse cocaine, heroin, methamphetamines, and prescription opioids. Their academic achievement is also jeopardized. The report comes as no surprise to trans activists and their allies. Amit Paley, who leads the queer teen suicide prevention group, the Trevor Project, told Reuters that the report sends the message to transgender youth that they are not alone. He encouraged the CDC to expand its scope to a wider geographical survey sample in future studies. A study released last week by the Williams Institute at UCLA found that states with LGBTQ-inclusive anti-bullying laws had lower rates of queer teen suicide than states without such protections.
An activist in Singapore is hoping to use the overturning by India's Supreme Court of that nation's anti-queer sex law Penal Code Section 377 to fight a similar statute there. Brian Chung filed a legal challenge this week to Singapore's Section 377A, arguing that the British colonial-era law is unconstitutional. The Southeast Asian City-State Supreme Court has rejected earlier challenges, the most recent in 2014. Chung's lawsuit, which he filed in November but only came to light this week, cites Singapore's constitutional guarantees of personal liberty, equal protection, and freedom of speech and expression. A spokesperson for the target of the legal action, Singapore's Attorney General, declined comment, as the matter is now before the courts. Public opinion polls show a slow but steady increase in public acceptance of same-gender relationships, with younger people leading the way. In the most recent survey, 55% of respondents under the age of 24 agreed that adult Singaporeans should be able to engage in consensual same-gender sex, and 30% supported the repeal of Section 377A. This is the second lawsuit filed against the anti-queer sex law in Singapore's High Court. In his pending challenge, filed 4 days after India's repeal was announced, entertainer Johnson Ong Ming, who goes by the stage name DJ Big Kid, calls Singapore's statute absurd and arbitrary. Court challenges to anti-gay sex laws are also pending in Jamaica and Kenya.
In other news, Brazil's only openly queer lawmaker, Jean Willis, has resigned from Congress and fled the country. The leftist politician, who was re-elected in October to a third term, told reporters that threats on his life had escalated since the election of self-avowed, proud homophobe Jair Bolsonaro to the presidency. For the future of this cause, Willis said, "I need to be alive. I do not want to be a martyr." Willis rose to fame as the winner of the fifth season of TV's Big Brother Brazil in 2005. He had served in Parliament since 2011. Willis said that he plans now to study for his doctorate while in exile, but would not say where. He said what drove him to flee the country wasn't the election of Bolsonaro, it was the increase in violence after he was elected, he said. But LGBTQ Brazilians have not lost their only out lawmaker. According to the New York Times, Willis will be replaced by David Miranda, an openly gay city councilman in Rio de Janeiro. He's the husband of American investigative reporter Glenn Greenwald. Miranda taunted Bolsonaro in a tweet late this week. "Check your emotions," he wrote. "One LGBT is leaving, but another is entering. See you in Brasilia."
And finally.
Hi, I'm Pete Buttigieg, and I'm mayor of the city of South Bend, Indiana. And I'm so excited to share with fellow members of the LGBTQ community and the Victory Fund that today I'm launching an exploratory committee to run for president of the United States.
That's the 37-year-old mayor with a difficult-to-pronounce last name in a video posted by the queer candidate supporting Victory Fund. Mayor Pete, as he's known around town, is already making the cable news circuit, well, maybe not Fox, so far as we know, as a legitimate presidential candidate.
I'm mindful of the historic nature of a potential candidacy, seeking to be the first ever out nominee of a major party in American presidential politics. I know what this kind of representation means and how much it matters, partly because I grew up in Indiana. Mike Pence was the governor of our state when I came out publicly during a re-election campaign for mayor. And when I joined the military, don't ask, don't tell was still the law of the land. I've seen how much leadership matters, and I've seen the kind of changes that can happen too, but they don't happen on their own. This is so important, especially for my generation. I belong to a generation that provided most of the troops in the wars after 9/11, that's going to be experiencing climate change in an extremely serious way. It's the generation that stands to be the first to make less than our parents if something doesn't change, but also the first generation to know marriage equality as the norm, and perhaps the first generation where someone can announce a campaign for president with his husband at his side.
In an already crowded field of Democratic contenders, Pete's probably got the proverbial snowball's chance in hell. Then again, look who's president now.
The worst tragedy in the history of this country.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending January 26, 2019. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at the ever-updating thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Wendell Jones.
And I'm Jessica Andrea.
As a young teenager, I was in search of answers, so I read the Bible from cover to cover twice. I don't know that I found any answers, but I enjoyed the stories.
Those old stories get new life later in the program. The U.S. Supreme Court issued a ruling on January 22nd, lifting most of the injunctions blocking the implementation of President Donald Trump's ban on transgender military service. Trump-appointed Justices Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh joined the 5-4 majority. One lower court injunction was left intact without explanation. This Way Out's Greg Gordon tries to sort it out.
Come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
The Obama administration policy that would have allowed qualified trans people to serve openly in the U.S. military was set to take effect in July of 2017. Obama Defense Secretary Ash Carter's declaration a year earlier had followed months of study and debate inside and outside of the military. Then Trump tweeted, "This patchwork report attempts to untangle the messy Supreme Court ruling and figure out what comes next. For initial analysis, we turn to two queer legal eagles."
What happened today was essentially the result of the Department of Justice attorneys asking the Supreme Court for two different things.
That's Peter Wren of Lambda Legal, one of many advocacy organizations that have challenged the proposed trans ban in court. He spoke with Pacifica Evening News.
The first was that they had asked the court to take up review of these cases, even though the courts of appeal hadn't yet ruled, and to essentially leapfrog over the ordinary process. And thankfully, at least the Supreme Court didn't take that bait and declined to accept premature review of the cases.
Jennifer Levi is with the New England-based legal group GLAAD, which also filed suit against the proposed ban. She spoke this week with MSNBC's Rachel Maddow.
The other thing the court did was to green light the ban in terms of it going into effect, although there are remaining barriers that the government will have to challenge.
So it cleared its way through some of the lower court orders that had blocked the ban from going into effect, but not all of them.
Not all. That's right.
So when do those get adjudicated?
Well, the government's going to have to ask the district court in which one of those barriers is still in place to lift that ban, and we'll have to see how that goes forward.
There is one case left where the injunction is still in place.
Maryland?
Yes.
Our friends Ann Northrup and Andy Hum at the weekly TV show and podcast Gay USA add their usual pithy perspective.
So now, presumably, the Trump administration will go back into court to get that injunction lifted, too. And then they will be free to, if they want to, institute the ban on trans service with some caveats until the Supreme Court, a year from now maybe, decides overall whether you can throw trans people out of the military.
One of the caveats is they're saying, if you already came out, you can stay, even though you're unfit for service.
Yes, and if you're serving but you haven't come out, you can still serve as long as you don't take hormones and you serve as your biological sex.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Essentially, don't ask, don't tell 2.0.
Chase Strangio is with the ACLU, yet another group suing the Trump administration on this and several other issues. He spoke on Democracy Now!
Even worse, they're essentially suggesting, as we've seen across this administration, that trans people don't exist at all, full stop. That you can actually somehow suppress your transness and live comfortably in your assigned sex at birth. And this really is the goal of this administration.
Those who are serving openly as trans can continue their course.
They are grandparented in.
Yes.
It's
grandfathered
ridiculous.
In is what they used to say.
Yes.
I see that you're amending it.
You might be able to continue serving.
Again, Lambda Legal's Peter Wren.
If and only if the existence of this grandfather exception isn't used against the government to strike down the ban. So the government has essentially said, if the existence of us grandfathering in some people is used against us in litigation to strike down the ban, then we're severing even the grandfather clause, and even those people who are subject to it can be discharged.
You can serve as trans not openly if you're not doing anything about it, but if you are actually on medications, then you are subject to discharge. So now those people are faced with the exquisite dilemma of, do I come out before the ban is put in place because then that secures my place, or do I stay closeted? And no. There's no easy answer to that.
They won't be kicked out, but they'll be considered unfit while still serving.
That's right.
Again, GLAAD's Jennifer Levi with MSNBC's Rachel Maddow.
It makes no sense, and it really underscores how unprincipled the ban is, because it would allow transgender people to continue to serve, recognizing that those individuals have met all of the, you know, very high standards for continuing in military service, and yet would exclude other people who have not come out yet, and it would exclude all transgender people who seek to enlist. I will say there's been tremendous amount of confusion, you know, lack of clarity, would say, at a minimum, from the government about how it intends to proceed, and that's been true from the minute the tweets were issued by the president. We're actually optimistic because in rejecting hearing the case now, it allows us to go back down to the district courts and put on the evidence that we think will absolutely refute the government's statements that transgender people can't serve. We also think that, you know, the fact that transgender people have been putting themselves, their lives on the line every day in service of their country is going to help to prove our case.
Trump and his cronies have tried to come up with every imaginable excuse to prevent qualified transgender people from serving their country in the U.S. military. One claim is that the costs of health care for transgender troops would be astronomical. Experts say they represent far less than the cost of one expensive piece of military hardware. Lambda Legal's Sasha Bukert spoke on the PBS NewsHour.
They've had well over a year since this litigation began, a year and a half, to bring forward evidence showing that there's been some effect on military readiness, and they have failed. They have provided no evidence.
U.S. Army Chief Mark Milley is Trump's nominee to chair the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Milley was direct and to the point on the issue during a congressional hearing last year.
Have you censored anything how transgender service members are harming unit cohesion?
No, I have received precisely zero reports of issues of cohesion, discipline, morale, and all those sorts of things. No.
Straight military personnel will have to shower with homosexual.
What do you think goes wrong when people shower with homosexuals? Do you think it's the spray makes it catching? I mean, we don't get ourselves dry cleaned.
Hello, I'm Barney Frank, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now?
With our coverage of the U.S. Supreme Court's muddied ruling this week on the freedom of transgender people to join the U.S. military, I'm Greg Gordon. Laverne Cox is a multi-talented entertainer and activist. She placed the current trans-military debate in context and told Democracy Now! This week about some disturbing material she discovered online.
Well, first of all, I'm not surprised, given the nature and the makeup of who is on the Supreme Court. When I look sort of historically and try to put things in perspective, this is part of a larger pattern of the attack of transgender people that maybe started 4 years ago or so. I think after the passage of marriage equality, some conservative folks needed another sort of group to scapegoat in part. And since, I arguably say, 2014, trans people have been more visible in the media than we ever have before. Through YouTube, et cetera, the real lived experiences of trans people are actually out there for people to access. We've seen unprecedented introductions of anti-trans legislation in state legislatures all over the country. There's probably been over 400 in state legislatures since 2014. And trans people are being murdered with impunity. It's disgusting. I did a deep dive recently on YouTube. Somehow some anti-trans video came up, and I was like, let me see what these people are saying. And I usually don't expose myself to that kind of thing. And it was really fascinating how coordinated the anti-trans movement, I would say. It's very coordinated. They have very similar talking points. They're groups that are organized just to introduce anti-trans legislation all over the country. I mean, it can't be a coincidence that all these pieces of legislation are being introduced. So there's a very coordinated movement to basically attempt to define gender based on what you were assigned at birth, ultimately based on genitalia, because that's usually how we assign gender at birth.
Trans entertainer and activist Laverne Cox. Alexis Sanchez is chair of the Transgender Advisory Board for the City of West Hollywood. She moderated This Way Out's recent live stream event called Talking Transgender, a Global Rally Cry, and underscored another aspect of the trans ban that's not often discussed.
I grew up in a low-income neighborhood. I went into a low-income high school, and the recruiters were always there. They were always there in the schools. And for those who didn't have the grades to go into college, who still wanted a shot at like having a nice car, having some sort of savings, and then for those who were maybe questioning their gender, like this was, you know, 20 grand to have an elective surgery isn't going to come by easily. But if you go and you do a tour, like this all of a sudden gives you access to be able to have this medical care and access to things that you wouldn't otherwise have. You know, I have tons of personal opinions of the military. I personally would never serve, but like I understand that that gave some of the people that I went to school with an opportunity out. And so to take that away from people, it's just, you know, it's an absolute travesty.
Aubrey Sassoon was also on the Talking Transgender panel. She promotes the well-being of queer young people in particular and offers programs of support for the whole family during times of transition. Discussing her educational experience, Sassoon name-dropped one of Donald Trump's dirtiest divas of division.
I went to the same high school as Stephen Miller, and we'd never had recruiters come into our high school. Like, it was not, you know, we were a very affluent community, and so we didn't have those same things, you know, coming up. People had so many outs, you know, if they didn't like their situation. They had so many ways to leave, and so it's definitely, it definitely shows a lot of the class from people in administration, which is unsurprising.
You can see the video of the entire Talking Transgender discussion of the Trump military ban at thiswayout.org.
I want to say something, too, to a lot of people who I've been in community with for a long time who have very justifiable concerns about the actions of our U.S. military and don't support the military for many reasons.
Once again, the ACLU's Chase Strangio.
This isn't a question about whether or not we support United States military policy. This is a labor issue. This is a survival issue. This is a question about whether the largest employer in our country can tell transgender people that they are not welcome, that they cannot actively be who they are and retain their employment. So we should be incredibly concerned not only about what this means for trans people, for our employment, for our health care, for our survival in absolutely every context, but also whether or not we're going to accept a government policy that's premised on the idea that we don't exist and that if we do exist, we should not be protected in any way.
My dad actually served. He was in the Army, just something that I have wanted to do my entire life.
That's Cleveland, Ohio's Connor Callahan, a 30-year-old physical therapy student and a plaintiff in one of the lawsuits challenging the ban. He spoke to Pacifica Evening News.
A lot of trans people do transition medically, and for a lot of us, myself included, the goal really is to live in the gender that we feel comfortable as, and that includes a lot of medical transition and surgeries in order to make that possible. And so even saying that a trans person could join as long as they served in their birth gender is still really unfair and really just a simplification of what it means to be transgender.
From every perspective, it's insane.
Yeah.
A parting shot from Gay USA's Andy Hum and Ann Northrup.
The military is having trouble recruiting people as it is. Young people don't care about this. The people they're recruiting don't care about it anyway. And it is absolutely heartbreaking, the signal they're sending to the entire society that transgender people are unfit people.
It's similar in a lot of ways to the civil rights movement.
We'll give the last word about this week's U.S. Supreme Court decision to trans man Connor Callahan.
I think that this fight for trans people will be looked back on in a pretty similar way as civil rights. I think that people in the future will wonder why the ban was ever put into place and why anyone thought that legislation should be made based on ignorance and hatred and misunderstanding.
So you gotta let me know.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres, and you're listening to This Way Out. That was without cue cards, people.
By the rivers of Babylon, where we sat down, there we went, when we remember Zion.
Author and reviewer Trade Places. As our queer life and literature commentator Janet Mason's latest book gets an appraisal from one of her favorite writers, Vanda of Juliana fame.
All the Bible stories from your childhood suddenly jump to life in Janet Mason's new novel, They. The manner in which they are presented I found to be a lot of fun. The story is about a woman named Tamar who lives in ancient times around the same time as Joseph, who had that cool, colorful coat, which, by the way, never gets mentioned in They. Tamar and her family live in tents. She is obsessed by her camel Aziza, who she keeps reminding everyone is not a camel, but a dromedary, because she only has one hump. Her friends and family don't seem to care a fig about the difference, but it is very important to Tamar. She and her dromedary have a very special relationship that is as important to her as her relationships with her friends. Aziza sleeps inside the tent with Tamar, something that later causes Tamar problems. What I liked most about the book was that I was part of the discovery. I would be reading about Tamar and her family and friends, and then suddenly one of them would mention a relative or acquaintance who lived in another land. Gradually I would come to realize this person was a famous biblical character. For instance, Naomi and Ruth, from Whither Thou Goest fame. As a young teenager, I was in search of answers, so I read the Bible from cover to cover twice. I don't know that I found any answers, but I enjoyed the stories. I was able to connect to those ancient people. The stories in They are told in simple, everyday language. They do not sound biblical. They sound human. The main character, Tamar, takes us through the whole book. She even dies and lives for a while as a spirit. She ends up in the womb again until the day she is born into a new life. Gender is flexible in They. Although people are as hung about gender as we are, I guess we probably got this way because of them. Different genders and sexual orientations still emerge. Tamar, in her first life, has a lesbian experience that she wants to continue. But the other woman can't accept Tamar's favorite dromedary sleeping in the tent with them. I can't say that I blame her. Intersex twins make an appearance, but they end up living their lives as males because this was the preferred sex, like now. They is a fun read that asks the big questions about who we are, where we come from, and where we're going. It's not necessary to know the Bible to understand this book. It just puts a different slant on those age-old Bible stories you might have heard a long time ago. Reviewed by Vanda, author of the Juliana series. They, a biblical tale of secret genders by Janet Mason.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Wenzel Jones and Jessica Andrea, produced with Brian DeShazer, from Greg Gordon, and from Vanda. The Clash and Boney M. performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, Paul Bainan, Christopher Matthews, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible. You can join them by visiting thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KGAY Thousand Palms Coachella Valley, California, Gay SA Radio Pretoria, South Africa, Grateful Dread Public Radio Nashville, Tennessee, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.